Hello and welcome to episode 23 of
Technologics,
your weekly roundup of all that is technological, political, and related to
and the fusion things thereof. Fusion.
This week we have an exclusively, well, it's not really exclusive, but it's a big story to break with you and break into you. And
yeah, it's an Irish story.
It is, it's Irish. For the first time ever, well, no. But for the first of several times, no. Well, for one of the several times that we've done, it's an Irish story. It's going to take up most of today's show, so switch off if you're not interested in Ireland or you're just, you know, one of those English people. And
yeah, we don't like this.
But before that, we have some answers to some readers' questions.
Yes, pressing issues.
This is an answer to Father Brendan from the Ballybunion area of Leitrim. And Father, I have to say, I'm not a doctor, but I would recommend you try to pull it out with forceps. And failing that, the manufacturer can probably melt the blockage for you. But I would go to a doctor if you can't get it cleared up.
Seek medical assistance.
Our second letter comes from Little Timmy in Manchester. And, well, Little Timmy, it's customary to use piss.
Customary to use what?
The mouthful.
I've never used purr. Is it good? Can you get that in the pharmacy?
Pretty sweet. It's customary to use pesos, but the natives will accept any form of currency, including tinned goods and beads. Okay, moving on to our special story.
I was hoping you could get to use purr.
I'll be purr you in a second. So, those of you who've been following with interest the file-sharing debate, especially in this country, may have noticed that this week a case hit the High Court. This was, of course, the ISPs being sued, so to speak, or at least taken to court for the access to information that they have kept about those of their users who have been identified by the recording industry as file-sharers. Those naughty, naughty boys and girls,
allegedly
file-sharers, who engage in the illegal upload and download of copyrighted material. So this is following on from a case last year in which cases brought before the High Court, and BT, Aircom and other ISPs were asked to provide the names and addresses of their users who have been caught by the representatives of the recording industry allowing their songs to be downloaded. Here are the details you may not have heard. This case involved, in fact, a US company gleaning the information of where these songs were coming from. So their methodology involved going onto the Nutella network and the FastTrack network, and that's what LimeWire and Kazaa use, respectively, and various other clients, and essentially downloading one or two tracks to see if it was possible, see if they were really what they were named, so see if they were actually copyrighted material.
If you actually do it.
And then taking screenshots of the remainder. So if you've got 500 songs available for download, they download a couple off you to prove that it's not just misnamed. And then take a few screenshots.
Yeah. So,
and that was the case last
year. That was their evidence.
And the case last year was passed, and the ISPs, they provided some decent arguments why they shouldn't be allowed to do this, provide this information. But they didn't oppose the case, because if they'd opposed it and lost, they would have been liable for costs. And for a variety of other reasons, they didn't oppose and they didn't support it, but they gave the information at the end. The judge rules that they should. Fast forward a year, we get another case last Tuesday in the High Court, again, before Justice Peter Kelly, apologies for that. And Justice Kelly, again, this is under phase two of IMRA's action against FileShare. And if you've ever been struck with a phaser on phase two,
it's the Empire Strikes Back.
So they're crushing you with their mighty claw of phase two, and this was again against copyright infringing file sharers. 49 people were sued this time, or at least 49 names and addresses were sought so the people could be sued, and They downloaded tracks from various, or had available for upload, tracks from various record companies, including Warner Music, Universal, and Sony, and each had 500 to 5,000 songs available. So, in an affidavit the manager of EMI, Ian Kavanagh, he has stated that publicity measures used by the ISPs, so that any kind of advertising that they're using, whatever, to dissuade people from downloading songs, are unlikely to succeed. And he claimed, and this is an extremely controversial claim, that 50% of fostering decreased in Ireland by 50% after the last round of lawsuits, and that it rose up a couple of months after. This is despite the fact that in the United States, where 7,000 lawsuits have been issued, and actually issued, not just names and addresses, fostering is still continuing to rise. So that's extremely questionable. And they sought the names and addresses and phone numbers once again. So Digital Rights Ireland, who we've actually spoken to this week, and we should ideally have an interview with Bernie Goldbach from Digital Rights Ireland, either attached to this podcast in some fashion or on our feed. And this is, we'll ask them essentially all the questions that you might want to ask about Digital Rights Ireland's stance on this whole file sharing debacle and a few other interesting issues that they're involved in. Digital Rights Ireland provided information to the ISPs essentially of a case which occurred in Holland. And this case basically was a very similar case where, again, recording industry system in Holland.
It was the same company which got the information for the case a year ago.
Yeah, they were going to try and find names and addresses. And they used the same company that they had used to get this sort of information. And unfortunately, this is an American company. So the court in Holland viewed that under European data protection laws, you couldn't just export user data like this to the United States because they don't have the same sort of laws to protect your privacy in the United States. They don't have the European Data Protection Act or an equivalent.
Yeah.
So this company couldn't just be used like that. Unfortunately, this was raised in court on Tuesday, but the judge decided to grant the access to the names and addresses. So the reason the judge conceded was that the barrister representing the labels stated that litigation is currently being conducted in many countries and the courts there apply the data protection legislation as they find it, effectively stating that in this case, property is more important than privacy. That the breach of property law, that the quote-unquote theft, is more important than the privacy implications of the case. So the judge described the levels of piracy, quote-unquote, as a not petty theft. Some of it seems to be theft on a grand scale. And the court ordered the names and addresses to be handed over. There are a huge number of issues raised by this. One of the most important issues is, of course, IP addresses, which they were tying to user accounts, don't necessarily represent end users. You can have an open wireless access point.
Yeah.
You can be on a network, you can be sharing a subnet with lots of other people.
Yeah, you could have a wireless router at home, and many people don't secure them because their user interface is usually very badly designed, so people have no idea how to set up the security necessary on it. It's pretty much a dark art. You have to be a nerd and pretty patient to set it up. So many people don't, and they're not default set to work securely. So it's quite easy to actually get access to someone's wireless home account, although it is technically illegal to do so. And someone was prosecuted recently in the UK for doing that.
But not here. So it's not necessarily legal under Irish law. Plus, many businesses offer free Wi-Fi. McDonald's offers Wi-Fi in some areas. And as Bernie Goldbach said in today's interview, even in Carlow Town, an area as remote as wee Carlow, there's three open access Wi-Fi points in the city centre. So many businesses offer this service. So do cafes too. Should they all shut down for fear of liability? Or is the tying of IP addresses to names and addresses of users completely unreliable?
Well, if you think of like Google making the whole of, is it San Francisco Wi-Fi hotspot? Then Google are opening themselves up to getting sued all over the place, because it'll just come up as, oh, Google.
Sure, and of course we don't have a huge municipal Wi-Fi projects like that here, but we do have companies like Irish Broadband offering Wi-Fi to local areas, and there's various kind of local coalitions who are attempting to form kind of local Wi-Fi groups to get a large piece of backbone and spread that out amongst a lot of people very cheaply. And they're all using kind of one central internet connection. And it isn't always necessarily possible to tell very precisely who's downloading what.
Yeah, exactly, who's there. I mean, it's probably still possible to spoof IP addresses if you're really determined on such things. So
this is obviously very important. If you've ever used file sharing, especially on the Nutella or the fast track networks, you could be liable. But what's essential, what's essentially going on here is that it's those who are using, who are leaving a large amount of tracks available to download in their shared folders, who are really under threat.
Yeah.
We're not suggesting that you should download from file sharing networks, although download you may, but if you are doing so, leaving tracks available to upload is extremely dangerous for your
Yes, and the more tracks that are there to upload, the higher the amount of money that the record companies will seek from you, because they will charge per track that's available. So if you have 5 versus 500, they're going to look for a lot more money off you.
And we're talking big money here. This is up to €1,900 liability per track made available, up to a total of €127,000 approximately maximum.
Some of the most expensive singles ever made.
Well, this is another issue. This is, of course, ridiculous. The assumption that each track that you have available to upload is costing company X amount of money, which is the potential amount that could be downloaded or whatever. Because, of course, you know, for a whole variety of reasons, which we'll get onto, that's a fallacious assumption. But that's the law. And it gets worse. You could be liable for criminal prosecution. This was mentioned in the case. And under the Irish Copyright Act, Section 140 of the 2000 Copyright Act, you could be liable for up to 5 years in prison. So look forward to your 5-year prison term if the recording industry decides to press its luck on that one.
Eek.
Yeah, so, and there, this is another issue. We've mentioned this in the past, but I've spoken to various people in some journalistic areas, and we might be seeing some articles or mentions of this in the future. And indeed, there have been some in the mainstream media. What are we talking about? I'm talking about iPods and how using them in Ireland with your CD collection is illegal. Ripping CDs is an infringement. Putting them onto your iPod is another infringement. Listen to my interview with Bernie Gelbach for more detail, and stop using your iPods or start thinking about what you think should be illegal. Criminal under Irish law.
They should just like make a register of those who buy an MP3 player and say, oh, you're going to jail.
Yeah, you might think they could know. Of course they could know. How could they know what songs you have on your computer? But a recent update to iTunes has enabled information being sent back to the Apple Music store, even if you're not purchasing from the store.
There was absolute uproar over it. It can be turned off, so if you have this latest version of iTunes, Do turn this off, because you don't know what Apple are keeping this information or what they're going to use it for. And they could be using it to spy on you and determine which tracks you bought legally and which ones you might have ripped from CDs. And if you're from Ireland, they could be like calling up the record companies here going, someone did something they shouldn't.
And also, remember that it doesn't matter. They don't have to get a list of every track on your computer. All they have to get is a list of the number of songs that you have. Chances are, they subtract that number from the number that you've bought from the iTunes store, and what remains is the number that is breaking law, is infringement under Irish law.
Exactly. You could have a whole pile of tracks you just ripped from CDs. Your own CDs that you paid for.
And most people do. Most people I know who have iTunes and who use it with their iPods do rip their CDs, whether or not they file share. In fact, much more people that I know do CDs than they file share.
It's pretty pointless buying an iPod and then carry around your CD player and a bunch load of CDs, is it not?
Certainly.
It's like, oh, I've got my iPod, but I can't rip the CDs, so I have to carry my CD Walkman and my CDs with me everywhere as well.
Not only that, but you're paying for your music twice, which is absolutely insane.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So we recommend that you tell your parents, you tell your grandparents, and you tell your aunts and uncles and your friends and your kids, and vote against and threaten to vote against TDs and MEPs who support such legislation, and contact your TDs, contact your MEPs, contact your MEPs on a whole other variety of grounds, but including copyright infringement grounds, but contact your TDs urgently, pointing out that this is a huge problem with Irish law. There's no fair use provision. It makes a whole series of interesting technologies illegal. PVRs are technically illegal under Irish law, so you won't see a Tivo anytime soon. The only reason you got a Skybox is because Sky themselves allow the use of it.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous, and it makes lawbreakers of a lot of us who wouldn't have thought we were or doing anything even slightly wrong. We're just listening to music we actually pay for.
Exactly, and they're expecting you to pay twice, so it's pretty penurious. But someone once said that when the anvil of law falls on the majority of the population, It's the responsibility of politicians to change that law. And it's your responsibility as citizens to contact your local representatives and have them change it. And very few letters can make a huge amount of difference.
Yeah.
So we have some suggestions for why these laws may be wrong. It's a big list. Francis is going to chew through it.
Quite a list. Okay. First of all, copyright infringement is not stealing or theft, because the Oxford English Dictionary defines it as the felonious taking away of the personal goods of another. Note, taking away. It's gone. So, I mean, ripping to your iPod is not actually taking it away from anyone.
Neither is file sharing, as far as I know. Can't see any taking away going on there.
Ponder. Okay. Also, one of these myths that the record companies spread out, it does not lead to a drop in record sales.
There have been numerous empirical studies on this.
Yes.
If you want to check online on our wiki.
We
have links to many of them. Pretty much evidentiary, if not proof, then persuasive evidence that
and
downloading doesn't lead to a loss in sales.
Even today, a friend of mine came across something that compared the way the record companies measure sales, which is completely different from the way any logical person would measure sales, which is the amount of CDs or tapes, if you're really old, or vinyl, that people actually get into their hand and hand money over for at the record store. They judge it by how many they ship from the factories. So, I mean, it's...
They can ship as many as they want, and
or as few
their
as they
sales
want.
Figures go up and down at once.
Or as few as they want. So they can say, ooh, we sold none last year. You know, if they made none, they can't sell none. So it's like, oh my god, we're ruined.
And if you think the record industry are alone, then you're wrong, because Hollywood do the same thing with their movies. It's called creative accounting, and it's why most movies technically lose money, even though the studios that produce them make quite a bit of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a sad truth.
Anyway, okay. So, also we have the wonderful fact that the RIAA and IRMA have never even tried to make money out of file sharing. So, they've never even looked into it, because they're too busy trying to protect their own little monopoly and shut out anything that looks any little bit different that might threaten them. Excuse me.
Beer burp.
Okay. So, we also have the industry estimate of file sharing are deliberately low for three reasons. First of all, to make it seem illegal, because it's only a small group of, you know, nasty people and over there who are doing it, you know. So, a minority, so we can weed them out. We also have the fact that the real figures make a nonsense of their proclaimed impact on sales. So, what we know is that actually file sharers buy more music. They like music. They download it. They might download one song and they go, this is a cool band, and they might actually go out and buy a song. So, people who download are actually more into their music than people who don't. And they actually spend more on buying music than people who don't.
And so much file sharing is going on in the United States. 900 million tracks a year estimated, that if it was going to have the effect on the recording industry that they claim, it would have had that effect already.
Yeah,
and it is not having that.
They'd be all in the streets begging. But no, the sales are still good. And even though they have, competing against DVD, internet, digital television, CD sales have still increased. Shock! I think somebody's telling fibs.
In fact, the third reason we have here why the industry estimates the use of file sharing is far below its actual figures are the fact that it's so prevalent that the laws seem anti-democratic. It seems like a majority of people in the United States and a significant minority, 16% of Irish people, have file shared or continue to do so. And those laws are not representing that vast body of people. And if that seems like a small amount of people, well, that's a hell of a lot more than voted for the Progressive Democrats or Sinn Féin at the last election.
Yes. And one interesting thing I just came across this week, it was an interesting thing I noted, related, is there's a case in America, and I just read a quick post about it, and apparently the RIAA, again, from the case that they're bringing forth, their position seems to be that you don't have to share files to actually break the law or, you know, offend them. If you make files available so that they could be shared. So he placed them in a shared folder, but no one ever touches them. They see as that as like a reason to sue you.
Well, that's in the Irish case that we just had this week. That's what was going on. No one necessarily downloaded any of the tracks that remained available, but they were available to be let on and shared. If you think about it, really, what occurs on a network when you have a shared drive? That's file sharing.
Yeah,
you've got
that's
files
sure.
that are being shared. This is ridiculous. It's how computers work. It's not some sinful activity that people are indulging in out of evilness and the spiky horns on their heads.
Yeah.
It's a perfectly normal activity.
So it's pretty crazy.
We have a whole list of fans who approve of file sharing, or at least don't approve their fans being sued.
They basically, they don't approve of their fans being sued. And there's also a Canadian record company which is currently defending this family in Canada for being sued. And I think it's over some Avril Lavigne songs. Yeah, it must be one of the children in the family who actually did these songs. But the Canadian record company represents that artist, and they're actually defending the family, and they're going to cover the costs because they think, you know, it shouldn't be done.
Yeah, these aren't like minor artists. These are people like Alanis Morissette, Annie DeFranco, David Bowie, Green Day, Courtney Love, Pearl Jam, R.E.M., the highest paid band in the world with an $80 million 5-album contract, and Beastie Boys, etc. These are huge, huge acts who oppose, in principle, suing of music fans for the enjoyment and sharing of music, something people have done for, 2 million years.
Yeah.
We have a whole list of these
arguments
goes on and on. Check out our wiki.
On and on.
But of course, you know, just to fire off just one or two more, which you may or may not be aware of, so the majority of music in history that's been recorded is not available. That the majority of things recorded by musicians are not available. Why? Because the recording industry doesn't seek to make them available, whether online, where the distribution costs are effectively almost
zero,
nothing, or in CD form. This is the same thing translates with the majority of books, because copyright is the author's life plus 70 years, and who can defend that on any kind of ethical grounds? Your kids get taken care of, your grandkids as well. Then what's the point? That's, you know, that's 50 years of reasonable copyright after death. And even that's like, you know, if you're talking about the author benefiting, that's far beyond the author benefiting.
Yeah.
But 70 years, that's only corporations, people own rights. Well, what this has resulted in is the majority of books published in the last 100 years are unavailable. The majority of bestsellers published in the last 100 years are unavailable. This is art, some of it great, some of it disappearing, every last copy fading away.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
Of copyright.
And they're just disappearing to dusty old libraries.
And how will getting rid of copyright
yeah.
help? It'll be free. It'll be free online in one of the many repositories which exist for uncopyrighted or copyleft data. This is one of the many reasons. Check our wiki for more detailed reasons. We have hundreds of links literally this week to various articles and opinion pieces and surveys and factual data about these sort of issues. And do inform yourself. Realize that these laws need to be changed. They're wrong and they're criminalizing people who are simply music fans, people like you and me, people you might slightly disagree with or you might not, but people who are not criminals.
Yeah, exactly. It's being criminals of all of us.
Indeed.
Moving on.
Let's
hear the lawman.
Let's just check how long we have left. 10 minutes left. Sorry if that bores you, but it's a pretty important case to
it's
cover.
It's a pretty important thing, and it affects you're online at the moment. Or you've downloaded this from the internet, which means you're some bit tech savvy. So, I mean, you probably have an iPod or an MP3 player and some music on your computer, and you could be leaving yourself open to the big guys knocking down the door asking for lots of money because you might have shared some copyright music. So I think it's something everyone has to be aware of.
Yeah, you might say it's unlikely that they'll sue iPod users, but, you know, years ago it was unlikely they'd sue file sharers, and they did. And while you can't necessarily compare the two activities, they're both illegal.
Yeah, exactly. And if they think they can get the money out of it and force people to pay for the music twice by scaring them into doing so, I think they will.
I think so too.
We think so.
Ching ching. Ooh, on to some lighter stories. Well,
lighter stories.
Not for the people.
Not for the people infected by our next story, which is, are parasites controlling your brain? Scary stuff. Okay, interesting story that we came across this week. And it concerns parasites and people. And the effects they have on board. So, let's go for a quick example if you don't believe that parasites can not have any effect on people. Think of rabies. You've heard of rabies? Rabies. You know, dogs get it. They go a bit loopy and start biting people. Well, rabies is transferred by saliva. And if you're a rabies parasite, you want to be transferred to more and more creatures, you know, procreate and such state. So what do? You make the creature you're infected angry, aggressive, and bitey.
Bitey?
Bitey, yeah.
Bitey, okay.
I coined it. You heard it here first. Bitey.
I'm feeling awful bitey.
But it's true. People with rabies are more aggressive.
They're more bitey.
Yeah, they're more bitey. And it's transferred by the saliva, so it makes sense.
Mm.
So, I mean, that's an effect all everyone knows about. Okay, let's move on to the main part, which was concerns a little parasite called Toxoplasma gondii.
He's like a Gandhi. Guru. Hey, Gandhi.
Toxoplasma gondii. I will affect you and make you feel good.
So what does this parasite do?
Well, it lives in the guts of cats. Mmm, yummy.
We all like a bit of pussy.
Okay, and it spreads, the cats shed eggs, which can be then eaten by rats and other animals, which cats then eat. Okay, so the parasite gets to spread itself.
Are you sure it doesn't live in the guts of rats who are eaten by cats?
No.
Oh, freaking.
It lives in the guts of cats.
And then rats eat the cats, and the cats eat the rats?
No.
It's kind of circuitous.
The cats shed eggs, which are then eaten by creatures, which are eaten by cats. So it gets to spread itself that way. It goes through a middleman. It doesn't spread itself directly to other cats. It spreads itself through rats or mice or other creatures which cats eat. The thing is that when this parasite infects a rat, say, it has been shown that rats infected with this parasite show a far less tolerance for the smell of cats. So basically, normally rats, when they smell cats, they are scared.
I'm allergic to cats, even the mess.
Yeah, exactly. They're scared crapless. They run, they hide, they stay away. It's a natural anxiety mechanism they have. In fact, an interesting thing I learned. Oh, you want to sneeze again? Possibly. Oh. My God.
I'm okay.
That's a severe thing. Just mention it?
Yeah, Jesus, that must be so conditioned. That's crazy.
That's crazy. You got something there. Anywho. Okay, so the rats normally run away from cats when they smell them. But rats with the parasite pretty much ignore the smell of cats. Which means, obviously, if there are cats around when they smell this, they ignore it. They get eaten by cats, and hence the parasite gets to infect a new cat. So
why should we care, Chris?
Why should we care? The interesting thing is that this parasite can also infect people.
Humans!
So if it can affect a rat whose brains are quite similar to our own, they have the same neurotransmitters and the same structure, basic structure. So if it can affect a rat, which has a similar brain to ours, can it affect a human, even in a subtle way? So what we have is E. Fuller Torrey of the Stanley Medical Institute and his colleagues have noticed some intriguing links between toxoplasma and schizophrenia. Pregnant women with high levels of toxoplasma antibodies in their blood are more likely to give birth to children who go on to develop schizophrenia. And most interestingly, if you treat this parasite with drugs for schizophrenia, it works just as good as drugs which are directed towards the parasite. So they're not quite sure whether this is causing schizophrenia. Is it the main cause, or is it just one of the possible causes? So if someone has schizophrenia, this is a possible cause of it, you know. But still, it's interesting evidence. And
there is more to this story, yeah. Which we don't have here in our notes.
Oh, yes.
There's
well,
much, much more. And more important.
Story about cultural diversity?
Yeah, this is, there's speculation.
Well,
another study has found, I think it's a separate study, I think it's 40% of people are infected with this worldwide. Wait, 40%
yeah.
Of people have it. Got it off their cats, I guess. Or whatever else they've eaten, rats. Well, they haven't eaten their cats, but you know what I mean. And the study has linked personality traits to infection. So they found that women who have this toxoplasmic germ effectively become more friendly and flirtatious, and men who have it become more neurotic and jealous.
What?
So it's actual cognitive behavioural differences. And they think that maybe this accounts for, and other parasites could account for, the cultural differences between societies. So some societies are extremely misogynistic, some societies are extremely liberal, feminine, masculine. Some of these differences could be based on diseases that lead to bacteria and
things that are floating around your head, like, that we spread around.
And sneezes.
Keep your parasites away from me, I don't want to be even anywhere.
You're the parasitic one around here, living on my coattails. We better rush through. We have about 4 minutes before this tape.
Okay. Wonderful Vista. Microsoft decides that if you don't write drivers that they approve, you won't get to run on Vista.
So this has huge implications.
Yeah. Basically because they can decide whose drivers get to run and also whose hardware gets to run, because they can just say, we don't like your drivers, hence, if the drivers don't work, the hardware don't work. So they can decide what hardware gets to run on Windows machines.
So this could be the equivalent of Microsoft imposing US law, or at least their interpretation of it, on users. So, you know, your future PVR or any kind of accessory that plugs into your computer that takes information off the TV or anything like that Microsoft don't like, or a console that competes with Microsoft and interfaces with your computer, blah, 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 blah. PS2 connecting to your computer, sound, your music, something like that, they could prevent it because they won't sign
Yeah, exactly. Anything from a competitor or anything like that, they could just say no. They say this agreement, it's free, but they still control it and they're under no obligation to give it to you.
So far Windows Vista blurs your screen if you don't have a monitor which will hide the picture if it shows what they don't want you to see, and it stops your devices working from. Yeah, thumbs up Microsoft, I'm going to emigrate to that.
Yeah, and it's all placed under, you know, we're preventing rootkits from attacking the system, which is probably a load of crap.
Trust Microsoft to use any threat to their advantage.
It's just, we're beefing up security by doing this. And worst of all, doesn't matter whether you're administrator or anyone else, you can't change it unless you somehow come up with a way to hack the system, hack the operating system. So unless you're some kind of hacker...
Hack the planet!
You're some hacker who manages to crack Windows Vista and allow it to do this. It's not going to happen.
So this
nasty
is
stuff.
Big news. So we suggest lobbying Microsoft. With much good it'll do you, probably none.
Probably not. I think one person said, I like this from the where it was posted first, study, it was like, cutting your leg off to avoid the pain after a workout. You know, signing every single piece of kernel running software.
I don't think I've ever heard of anyone installing a driver which gave them a virus in my entire history of using computers.
It's idiotic. Because if you're, usually most people who install drivers know what they're doing, and they'll go, they know where to go for the drivers, and they won't go after spyware or us, and viruses or us.
I'm guessing this is
part
of their trusted computing controller.
Yeah,
computing
it, yeah, it's totally, it's, I quote, it's like, drivers must be signed for devices that stream protected content. This includes audio drivers that use Puma. Protected user mode audio and PAP, protected audio path, and video device drivers that have protected video path output protection management. PVP blah. Basically, if there was, you created a driver that could somehow steal all the stuff they want to protect, yeah, they're not going to give it to you. And that's what it all is. It's just DRM, by another way.
It's vicious and evil DRM. We better roll through these last two. Okay, do you want me to take a minute?
Oh, yeah, okay. These 50 most loathsome people in America 2005. I think it's really the world, because like they can't say number 13, God, the most loathsome person in America. I mean, they're claiming God for themselves.
I think he spends more time in America than anywhere else, to be honest. But
maybe he does. You know? They do ask, why is he such a dick?
Massive. What a cop. God, you fuck. Hey, sue me.
Yeah.
And you've got another couple of pimps there.
Oh yeah, I also have Turbo Tanks Tank Game, which is just an interesting classic Atari 2600 classic game. And I also have MPAA DVD Warning Parody Video, which is quite funny, and one quote I like to take from it is that
You may view this media only in your own dwelling, in complete secrecy, with the shades drawn, and with an armed sentry posted at the door.
Posted?
Yes,
in the envelope.
Excellent.
Oh, I'm looking forward to receiving that letter.
With the Queen's stamp on it.
Goofball.
Posted.
See, two complain the mistaken pronunciation of a word came.
Eh?
Yeah.
Let's not start your typos.
Silence. I'm dyslexic. So my main attempt this week is an intricate and interesting theory for Lost, if you've been following this TV series with its compelling characterizations and intricate plot lines. You will may have wondered why they're at the island.
Hey, what the hell is going on?
And who they are, if they are not who they say they are. When they are, where they are, what is going on. This will explain it all, probably incorrectly.
Yes, indeed.
Follow the link. Oh, no,
I think it's all a bad dream caused by a ham and cheese sandwich.
Indeed.
You heard it here first. So thank you for tuning in. And check our feed for the Bernie Goldbach interview.
He was very nice to give it to us. He's lovely. He's a lovely fella.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Do feel free to write in next week with your fake questions that I'll make up. And tune in again for Technologics. This has been me, Garrett Stack, and him,
Francis.